the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Friends and enemies, welcome to yet another edition of the CBP, the mighty CBP. And this one is going to be just myself, Len. Joey is going to be doing some duties this evening. He'll be interviewing Preston Pish. So today, on this episode, I'll be interviewing Kevin Rook. We'll be talking about Lightning. But before we go any further, just want to talk about our sponsor, EasyDNS. It's a great place to get any of your hosting services, web service, email, all that stuff. It's by a platform that is secure, private, and they share the same values as Bitcoiners. So if you're looking to open up a website, email hosting, anything along those lines, they're the people to talk to. And also NIP05, you're going to be able to get your Noster identification also done through them in the near future. That's going to be some really cool stuff. But without further ado, let's bring in the man of the hour, Kevin Rook. Kevin, how are you, buddy?
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, appreciate it. So before we go any further, Kevin, just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came into Bitcoin.
Sure. So my road into Bitcoin started in grad school in early 2017. I met a guy at a bus stop who we got talking, and he told me he was a professional poker player. He was playing online. He was earning a bit of money. He was only like 18 or 19. He was a freshman at the time. And I could tell right away he was much smarter than I was. And so I immediately took some of the cues, all the things he was talking about that I had no idea about. Bitcoin was one of them. And I said, okay, this guy's onto something. And I just had to double click on it and kind of look into it. And so I asked him to, join his poker ring and meet up with a bunch of his other poker buddies. And of course they were all also very smart. And also there was a lot of discussion about Bitcoin. And so that triggered me to go down the rabbit hole. That was the first kind of like aha moment where I saw all these people who I knew were much smarter than I was. And they were all very excited about this. And it was enough enthusiasm for me to step back and go, okay, I need to look into this. From that point on, I graduated about a month later. And so since that point, I've basically been working in Bitcoin, crypto, all through the ecosystem for the last, almost 6 years now.
Mm-hmm. So you've been through the ups and downs since 2017. So you've seen it a lot, you felt a lot, and you've experienced quite a lot. With respect to what's going on in the past couple of years, what are your thoughts in terms of with the China ban, with the run up to 69K twice, and here we are around 28K? What are your thoughts on what's going on in the past little while with the world of Bitcoin?
I mean, I actually feel less concerned now about, the very first, year of being in Bitcoin, of course, is a very, you have a lot of first experiences, right? And coming in at the time that I came in, I think, was, early to mid, probably mid 2017 was when I first started, really getting excited about it. But of course, I was coming out of grad school, I had no money. So it's not like I didn't have anything to lose. I didn't have anything to gain, really. I was just kind of watching. But at the same time, I was still blown away by the volatility and some of the just how exciting the space was. It was never a dull day. And so it seems, I think through that 2017, 2018, even into 2019, I think I got a lot of first experiences, and everything since then has been a little bit less chaotic. It's a little bit easier to comprehend, to absorb, and to kind of like move forward without letting it ruffle your feathers. So I don't actually spend a whole lot of time these days thinking about price or, adoption, in like, I don't spend my time hoping for the next company to jump in and adopt Bitcoin so it'll send the price up. I think I'm much more focused now on the grassroots Lightning adoption and the new use cases that are emerging. And I spent a lot more time thinking about the builders that are introducing new use cases. And I think that path is a much more stable path, a much more, it's a positive sum path. It's not a, that's kind of the path that I've taken in the last few years. I think it's a healthier path for myself.
Yeah, it's myself as well. I'm looking at more what's going on with the network to build out on it and the adoption of Bitcoin rather than the price. The price is, you know, it does drive a lot of the narrative, but in terms of what truly excites me is how Bitcoin is being built upon. And that's going to make it easier to use and easier to transact in the future. So that's the things that really excite me. But you touched upon the Lightning Network, and I want to really go dive deep into this. For the people that are unaware, what is the Lightning Network? And hopefully everybody's listening knows what it is. But for the one person that may not, Kevin, explain, what is the Lightning Network and how does it work?
Yeah, you know, this was interesting because I started studying the Lightning Network from an outsider. I was kind of like looking in on it a couple of years ago when Jack Mallers had his speech at Bitcoin 2021. I had another one of those light bulb moments where I was like, okay, this guy's onto something, kind of like my first introduction to Bitcoin. I clued in and spent the time to study it and learn what was happening. And I saw a lot of slow but steady and accelerating growth. So it wasn't like the kind of growth you were seeing in DeFi projects at the time. The volumes and the payments were not incredible. They were still growing slowly, but they were growing faster and faster every month from a small base and at a slow start. But that was enough to make me, you know, realize that if Bitcoin is going to be the money, this is the payment protocol. This is the tool on top that allows you to move that money back and forth instantly. And it was obvious to me at the time that if Bitcoin were to succeed, this was probably going to be the tool that helped people move Bitcoin back and forth. And of course, if Bitcoin is a success, there will be a lot of payments moving back and forth. Mm-hmm. It's not just going to be people holding on to their funds and, you know, hiding them and not doing anything with them. So that was enough for me. I thought that also in the Lightning ecosystem, there were a number of projects that were just like underappreciated, undervalued. I thought I could come in and kind of like shine a light on some of these projects and help them, you know, get to the next level. I looked around and I remember 2 years ago, I was hearing of DeFi projects raising at like, you know, pre-seed rounds or seed rounds at like $50 million, $100 million. And here's the Lightning projects raising at like 3 million or 5 million or whatever. And it was just a sharp contrast there, because I thought that if Bitcoin succeeds and Lightning is the payments protocol, the market for that is much bigger than the DeFi projects. But I think at the time people viewed DeFi as a bigger market than Lightning and then Bitcoin. And so there was a bit of a, I think there was a misunderstanding in the market that I think I've, you know, understood correctly. I believe Lightning is going to be bigger than all of the other DeFi protocols. And I think some of those valuations that I mentioned are kind of correcting now. But I just saw this thing that didn't make sense. It was this like, why is this one set of protocols being treated as such a valuable asset, and this other one here, which is attached to Bitcoin, as insulated without any other competitors? This protocol is not being valued very highly. The companies building on it are not being appreciated. It just felt like it was kind of being ignored.
Do you think that still that remains today? Do you think that Lightning is still being, as you mentioned, underappreciated and undervalued in comparison to, say, DeFi? No, DeFi took a real kick to the nuts in the past little while, but is that still the case with the Lightning Network? Are you still underappreciated and undervalued?
A little bit. I think so. Not as much as it was 2 years ago. I think now people are starting to realize, I think a lot of people now use the Lightning Network. I think 2 years ago, most Bitcoiners didn't. And I didn't when I first started using it, you know, when I first started studying it. When I heard that speech from Jack Mallers, I had not made I didn't run a Lightning node. I didn't have any understanding of, I might have earned some sats from a game or something like that. Or I think there was a tipping bot on Twitter back in 2019. I want to say, I think tipping.me, I may have played around with that, but I really had no experience with it. And I think a lot of Bitcoiners were in the same position. And so now it's great that we have, at least the Bitcoiners have come around and are really actively using Lightning. I hear all the time people, you know, in the industry, earning sats, playing games, posting on Stacker News, you know, listening to podcasts, things like that. And so it's really cool to see, you know, we have a small but growing community of people actually using this stuff. And so, you know, to some degree, that means it's more appreciated now, right? Fewer people are ignoring it in the Bitcoin ecosystem. But I still think overall, when you look outside of the Bitcoin ecosystem, yeah, it's basically ignored. I mean, there's not that many people that care about Lightning payments if they're not already interested in Bitcoin. And maybe one thing that's changing that a little bit is Noster, but I think it's still a bit too early to say. I know I've heard stories of people who have come to Noster and then found Bitcoin through that. So there's a bit of a new audience that is being tapped into with Noster and kind of like the zaps on Lightning are feeding into, or these people are now feeding into the Lightning ecosystem through zapping. But yeah, it's mostly, I'd say it's mostly still ignored outside of Bitcoin.
Tipping.me is still around too, but I guess it's far less used these days than it was in the past. And it almost seems like that model of tipping has been adopted within the Noster environment, where you could then create or submit a note or, you know, their version of a tweet. And if people deem it to be of value, they'll provide you with tips through the Lightning network. And that's really the value I find with Lightning integrated with the Noster. It really opens up people's eyes, especially once you start receiving tons of sats, just because you posted, like you shitposted something or actually provided something of value. But with respect to Lightning, and for anybody that has yet to use it, I'm hoping that everybody has, but just in case somebody hasn't, just explain what are the benefits it offers users compared to on-chain transactions.
So really, it's just instant and typically low fee transactions. That changes at scale, but it allows you to make payments that are too small for other payment platforms. It allows you to make payments faster than any other payment platform, and it allows you to do it in a relatively decentralized way. And so, you know, Bitcoin kind of, by building up the Lightning network in the way that it's been built out, it took a longer time to get it right. There's a lot of technical engineering work that has gone into this. And there's been a lot of protocols spin up in the crypto space that, you know, claim to be doing the same. They do it much faster. They, you know, spin up something real quick and, hey, look, we have instant payments, but none of that has ever proven to scale. Lightning seems to be different in the sense also, of course, that it doesn't have a token attached to it, but it has been built in a way that it is decentralized first. And that's something that Bitcoiners really care about. And it's obvious that ethos has been put into the protocol.
And to date, I mean, I've used it quite a bit and it's worked phenomenally. And the decentralized first approach, it's definitely noticeable. And but with respect to Lightning, the network, would you say there are any drawbacks right now in the existing system? Is there any security flaws you may see or anything that is preventing users from adopting it further in comparison to on-chain?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a security expert to comment on anything super technical. I know there are a lot of people working on solving a lot of problems that ranges from security, privacy stuff, routing problems. There's reliability problems that have been, you know, mostly fixed in the last couple of years. But yeah, it's a work in progress. I mean, we're all working hard to try and do whatever we can to help improve the network. And that covers the whole, you know, spread, right? I think when I started using the Lightning Network, reliability was, you almost expected the payment to fail if you were sending a big payment, if you were sending a million sats. And now it's basically an expectation that it's going to succeed, and almost a guarantee. I think River posted they shared some data from their node and they found a 98.7% success rate in processing payments in late 2022. So these kind of numbers are really encouraging, but it's still a far cry from what Visa and MasterCard can offer. It's a far cry from what you can get from, you know, look at the convenience you can get from using Apple Pay on your phone at a grocery store. You tap and you're done. And, you know, we're not there yet. So yeah, there's a lot of things that need to be worked on and improved. And it's a very high bar for, especially if Lightning is going to succeed as a consumer product and consumers are actually going to be interacting with the protocol, which I don't know if that will actually happen. If it does, though, there's a very high bar that has to be met. And sometimes it is easier to create that really high bar of UX and create a great experience in a closed ecosystem where you can control everything and you don't have to consider the decentralization aspects or routing across the network or privacy. So, you know, there's a lot of extra considerations that we have to you know, consider when building on Lightning. And so those that's what makes it hard, but it's also what makes the protocol, I think, resilient. And I think that's an important goal to go after.
It opens up doors for merchants because right now, if you go in and, as you mentioned, use your Apple Pay and it's linked to your Visa or MasterCard, the merchant is going to have to be absorbing those fees, 1.5 to whatever percentage it may be. And ultimately, those fees are going to be passed on to the consumer in terms of cost. So with respect to adopting Lightning, it seems to me there's an opportunity here for merchants to use it and to potentially lower their overall cost or increase their overall revenues. Just I'm wondering, what's the likelihood of seeing this in real-world cases moving forward? Are we going to see merchants adopting this somewhere in the next few years in Canada? No, I'm not talking about El Salvador, but maybe Canada, United States. Is this going to be a real possibility?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a slog to get there. Like, it's just going to be a tough grind, and it's a chicken and egg problem. And right now, you know, we're just at the earliest stage, and you know, we're going to have to get merchants to want to, you know, integrate Lightning payments. Right now, there's no need for it because there's no customers asking for it. Like, there's a few different levels. It's not just like we need to talk to merchants and get them set up. It's like we need to train the merchants. We need to educate them on why it is an important feature to offer. We need to get customers that want to spend Bitcoin, which in itself is a challenge. I mean, why? You know, now one thing you can say that kind of counters the idea of merchant adoption is, why would someone spend their Bitcoin when, especially if they've bought it? Mm-hmm. I think that's one important distinction, that if someone has bought Bitcoin, I think it's going to be harder for them to let go of it than if they earned Bitcoin. Yeah. So I just think that there's a lot of issues we need to work through in terms of getting Bitcoin in people's hands, get those people in a position to spend it, and then get the merchants in a position to accept the payments.
And also in Canada too, I'm not sure elsewhere in the world if they have this type of concern, but when you spend your Bitcoin, it becomes an administrative headache because you have to record the price at which you bought it and the price at which you sold it. And because this is a taxable event, then you got to record this, and it becomes more of a burden more than anything else. So it does create some hurdles with respect to customers wanting to spend their Bitcoin that you're bang on. But in terms of the user experience, how far away are we from actually saying, yeah, like, this is something that users may want to adopt? Because Strike, are they in this field? Because we don't have it available in Canada, so I don't have firsthand experience with this, but aren't they involved somehow with sending payments over remittances through the Lightning network, or is this all on chain?
Strike's doing it with Lightning in the back end. So that's something that's available right now. There's actually a number of countries and a number of companies that are all working on similar solutions. So I know Pouch and Zebedee recently made an announcement. Strike, of course.
Coin Corner.
Coin Corner. There's a few. There's Bitnob. And they're building the rails between countries so that someone in one country, in using that local fiat currency, can move that local fiat to another country, settle in local fiat, mm-hmm. and do it over Lightning. And so that's what, those are the rails that are being built out now. Now, of course, Strike is only available in a small number of countries. I believe it's El Salvador, maybe Argentina, US, and I think now they have an integration with Bitnob in Nigeria.
Yes, they do.
And so that's, you know, you're talking like a handful of currencies, maybe. Well, there's 190 countries, give or take a few. There's a lot of railroads still that needs to be built. And I know all these companies are working hard on achieving that. But just to kind of set the stage of where we're at today, I think right now we're still, again, in the like early innings of mm-hmm. building out just the rails to connect all these countries. And then once these countries come online, you know, their citizens begin to realize there's new applications or new money saving ways for them to move funds between different countries.
It's huge when you could send money over and the majority of it gets sent rather than eaten up in user fees, thanks to Western Union or whatever legacy company out there that's dealing that type of business. And with respect to the user experience, did you get any feedback from people that actually use it? Is it something that any normie could pick up, use, and it's kind of a seamless process, or is there still a learning curve involved with using them?
Yeah, it's a learning curve for sure. And it's also a spectrum. So if you're on the very easiest way to get onboarded to Lightning, maybe downloading an app from Thunder Games, playing, earning some sats, then having that automatically sent out to a wallet, and you land it, it lands in Wallet of Satoshi, and you've now got like a custodial wallet set up. Are you using Lightning? Are you not? I mean, you can make arguments that, you know, a custodial provider isn't, you know, you're not actually in control of your funds. I think that's like the entry level Lightning experience. And that is relatively seamless. It's, you know, it's still a bit of a learning process. You need to know what sats are, for example. That's another one that, you know, even in the Bitcoin ecosystem, I still think there's a lot of people that don't intuitively know how much sats are worth. Like, we express a lot of prices in Bitcoin. We very rarely express prices in sats. And that, I think, is something that is slowly changing again. But outside of Bitcoin, no one knows what sats are. You know, no one has ever heard the term sats. Everyone has kind of heard the word Bitcoin now. You know, in the last 10 years, you surely have bumped into that word at one point or another. But no one knows what sats are. And so you start downloading a game, you play, and you earn 12 sats, and you go, what is this? What do I do with these? You know, I think there's still some education work to be done there. And, but then, yeah, you go further down the Lightning rabbit hole, and then you start interacting with self-custodial wallets. You start running your own Lightning node. You start, you know, routing payments, maybe. There's all sorts of things you can do beyond just those surface level applications. And yeah, the education gap, it increases at every step of the way. There's a lot to learn, and it is by no means a seamless experience if you're diving deep into the weeds of Lightning.
So the user experience, it sounds like you're explaining it to be, it's a little bit of a challenge, and almost, I don't want to call it a failure at this moment, because it's something that's being built on and worked on. But with respect to Lightning, are there any things that has been done that has been deemed to be a failure, something that has been done wrong, and we have to change the way it's being done and maybe make it better or easier for users to take advantage of it?
I don't know. I wouldn't call anything at this point a failure. I think like we are in such early stages right now. We're trying to get as many people as we can building on Lightning. It's all just about getting more developers interested, getting more builders, getting more community members interested, enthusiasts. Like, anyone and everyone is kind of welcomed into the Lightning community today. We're all trying a ton of different experiments, but I think it's too early to call any. It's probably even too early to call any successes.
Oh,
like some are clearly headed towards success, but I don't know that, like, we haven't had some, like, you know, enormous exit of a Lightning company that makes everyone wake up and go, wow, this thing's the real deal. I think if you look around the Lightning ecosystem, there's maybe a handful of companies that are on the verge of being unicorns, you know, somewhere in maybe worth $1 billion. The Lightning Network itself has still, you know, only about $100 million of public capacity. So people looking at this, they still kind of, it's not unreasonable to think of this with skepticism. And I don't think that we've had a major success that has, I mean, maybe El Salvador adopting Bitcoin and, you know, bringing on Lightning payments and like integrating that into their country. That's probably the biggest success. But I think even that, because it's just a one-off, we haven't seen anyone follow in the same way. I think it's easy for people to brush that aside. And so we're going to take, you know, another few years before we find a really big success maybe. And, you know, it's just going to take time. There's going to be successes and failures over time, but probably too early to call them now.
I'm going to test your technical knowledge here. Do you know approximately what is the upper range for sending sats before it starts to fail? At what point do you say, like, if you're sending, say, 10 million, 100 million sats, does the routing going to be a problem because of liquidity or anything else along those lines? What is the conceivable upper limit that you should be sending and you know it's going to be sent in the Lightning Network today?
I don't know that there's the thing with Lightning is that there's not just one network. Every node has a slightly different view of the network. They have a different set of channels they're connected or different set of nodes they're connected to through their channels. And, you know, that is a better predictor of how big of a payment you're going to be able to get through. If you have really big channels with a lot of liquidity on both sides directly with another participant, you can send a lot of money back and forth without any issues. If you all of a sudden have to route through other participants, well, you better make sure their channels are have the liquidity in the right places as well. If they don't, you can start getting payment failures. Of course, the bigger amounts are easier to come by payment failures than smaller amounts, but small payments can fail too if you're not sufficiently connected to the network. And so, yeah, it's hard to, it's basically impossible to come up with one number, but I think people are regularly sending, you know, multi-million sat payments. I've heard of people sending a Bitcoin across, like routing a Bitcoin through the network. I think I've heard a couple of tweets on that, but yeah, generally it's still pretty small. I think River, for context, River's data from late 2022 said that their average payment size was about $46 in dollar terms. So, you know, still relatively small payments, but it's not like you can only send 10 cents.
Mm-hmm. In terms of when you do, if you have your own Lightning node, we'll be talking about that in a bit. What's your recommendation for the minimum amount of sats required to open a channel?
I don't really know. I mean, I think it's a bit of a, it's based on what your requirements are. Like if you're trying to operate a world-class routing node, you're going to need a lot of Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. It's just like, there's no way around it. You're not going to be competing with River and Kraken and Bitfinex with hundreds or thousands of Bitcoin in public capacity. If you got one, it's just not going to work. But if you only need one, if you need less than one, like there's very valid use cases for someone to be using Lightning, setting up a node, but not having much throughput. That's okay. If it solves your problem, you can make do with much less capacity. That's totally fine too. So I don't know. I mean, like I think there are still a number of hobbyist node operators, but I think I haven't seen that growth continue from, I remember in mid 2021 to let's say mid 2022, there was a lot of talk about people setting up their own Umbrals and Start Nines. I think that adoption has continued to a degree, but it's not nearly as aggressive as it was last year. So I think that, you know, we're seeing maybe fewer hobbyist node operators coming in trying to earn sats. I think that game is going to be one for larger participants willing to risk more money on the network and willing to just you know, put liquidity on the network and earn a small return for it. I think it's still, yeah, it's probably, that game is probably for larger players. But anyone can participate. That's the beauty of it, is like anyone can try it out, set up a node. You don't need to be incredibly wealthy to do it. You know, you can get a Raspberry Pi and a setup that it can be a couple hundred bucks maybe, and you can be off to the races and you can experience Lightning to its fullest.
So you need a Raspberry Pi, preferably 4 with the 8 gigabyte of RAM, because it takes a while to sync the initial block download, 1 terabyte hard drive. Software, what do you recommend in terms of, say, somebody that just wants to dive into this, somebody that has relatively modest amount of experience? What would you say is a good software somebody could run for their own Lightning node?
I think that's, again, up to personal preference. There's you know, cloud hosted nodes. You can do home. You can host it at home. There's a number of companies building these solutions for people. And again, it's a spectrum of like, what are your trade-offs? Do you want this to be running at your home? Do you want this to be running at someone else's data center? Do you need, you know, to have full custody at all times of your funds? Everything's kind of a trade-off in Lightning, and actually probably outside of Lightning too. There's no free lunch.
Correct.
And so it's there's so many personal preferences that could play into someone's decision. But I mean, the you know, most popular, I think, home node solutions are probably Umbral and Start9. Those are ones that folks tend to start playing around with, and then they go on from there. And if they need a merchant solution, or they need to like integrate Lightning payments into their app, they may go with Voltage or something like that. So there's a spectrum there.
Do you run your own? And if you do, do you want to disclose which one it is you run? Like, I'll disclose mine. I run Raspberry Blitz.
Yeah, I mean, I've experienced running a few different setups, but yeah, I don't have any, you know, meaningful node experience to make it useful to disclose.
Fair enough. You're familiar with Liquid Fintech. It's a publicly traded. Yeah. So we're going to be having their CEO and their company again on the show for an interview in the next few weeks. And they're one of the few players in this sphere that's, the only one that's publicly traded that I know that's in the sphere. Maybe Block would be the other one. They're both adding liquidity, massive amounts of liquidity to the Lightning network. But do you know of any other companies that are also doing stuff like this? I mean, those are the two that immediately come to mind. But anything else? Any other companies that are getting involved in the Lightning network?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the Bitcoin companies are going to be focused on this. This is like Lightning service providers are popping up all over the place. I know Lightspark is working on something related to Lightning service providers. I think maybe MicroStrategy is doing something related to that too. Block, of course, as you mentioned, is working on that. There's all the big nodes are on the network. Well, not all of them, but I believe River has a Lightning service provider as well. They're adding a bunch of Bitcoin through their nodes, which you can see, you can keep track of that. And I think they're up to, across their two nodes, I want to say there are 600 or so Bitcoin of public capacity.
Wow.
So there's lots of folks that are building out service providers and solutions for people to use and accept Lightning payments.
In terms of the evolution of the Lightning network, what do you see that's going to be happening in the next little while? Any developments you see that's under a horizon that's really exciting?
I think there's just a lot of people who are taking their first stab at building on Lightning. And what I thought was really interesting when I first started looking into Bitcoin was that I was talking to companies in the space, and I was chatting with founders, and I noticed, this was in 2017, every single one of them was like, I heard about Bitcoin in 2014 or 2013, started a company a year later. And then here we are in 2017, and they've had this company running for 2 years. And it was just like kind of shocking to me how consistent that story was, and how, you know, sometimes these cycles of adoption happen in waves. And I think that's kind of happened to a degree with Lightning, not necessarily in relation to the Bitcoin price, which is what I think that first wave of adoption, how that happened that I was talking about. If people discovering it in 2013, 2014, then, you know, going through a bit of a bear market 2015, 2016, and coming out on the other side in 2017, and everyone's like, wow, look at this incredible company. I think what's happening in Lightning is that in 2021, we started to get the first hint that this was going to be used. There was companies building on it, and that there was something here as a tool to build out a medium of exchange for Bitcoin. And we've just seen in the last year, just a ton of builders jump in, and they're all taking their first shots at it. And are all the business models going to work? No. Are all the founders going to succeed? No. But are we going to get some really cool innovations out of it and look back on this in a year or two and see a whole wave of successful, or, you know, poised to be successful companies? Yeah, I think so. So it's a bit too early to say for sure, you know, who's going to win and what the most successful businesses are going to be built on Lightning. But it's really cool to see how many people are experimenting with so many different things. Like, it's not just remittances. It's not just creators. It's not just earning yield as a routing operator. It is that and more. And I'm just really excited to be watching all of it. And, you know, I know I'm going to be surprised by stuff, and I don't have any special superpowers for predicting things better than anyone else.
Darn.
So I just try and watch closely and pay attention. And, you know, every few years or so, you know, I found in the last decade or so of my life, I think I'll find out some set of information. I'll have a little light bulb moment. That happened with Bitcoin. It happened with Lightning. And, you know, you just kind of put yourself in position to absorb information, connect dots. And every now and then you're going to get a big wave of excitement for a particular topic or for a particular industry, a particular company. And that is worth listening to, I think, and then pursuing. And so, but in between those moments, sometimes it's quite boring. It's like those ideas are special because they happen so rarely. And so I'm sure we're going to have more of those in Lightning, but I'm just tuning in and watching, and someone's going to come out at some point and build the app that gets 10 million or 100 million users, you know, in its first month, and everyone's going to go wild for it. But it hasn't happened yet, and I'm not sure where that app will be built, which segment of the ecosystem.
I think a lot of people fail to realize how young Bitcoin is. It's only been around for 14 years and change. It's not even old enough to drive. And we've gotten to this point. At one point, it was a $1 trillion asset, if you take into consideration the market cap. And I don't know where it stands now, maybe 500 billion. I don't know what the number may be, but it's come a very long way in a very short period of time. There's so much more that we're going to see happening in next little while. It's really exciting stuff. And another exciting project I see is RoboSats. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
Yes.
So that has, I mean, we could discuss how anonymous it may be when you purchase it, but Lightning does have an advantage where you can be somewhat anonymous on the Lightning network versus on-chain. So what are your thoughts about transacting in a private manner on Lightning? Is it something that is, something that is really secure, or something that has some security features to it? Or do you think that there's companies out there sniffing away transactions, trying to connect dots to see who it is spent what? And are there people doing on-chain analysis on Lightning?
I believe so. I don't have any special data into that in particular, just because I'm not technical myself, but I think there's going to be a constant tugging back and forth between people who want privacy and people who want to uncover private transactions. And so, you know, we're just going back and forth on this. And that's probably something that has been true throughout the history of the internet, where you can argue at certain points in time we had more privacy or less privacy, but the two tend to go back and forth in some kind of pendulum motion over, you know, different timescales sometimes. And I imagine we're going to get some more of that, where you probably are going to be able to make pretty much anonymous transactions if you work at it, if you have all the correct setup, if you are very diligent about what Bitcoin you receive, what Bitcoin you send. But there's also going to be instances of people who, being careless or using custodial products or whatever the thing is, are going to be able to be tracked, or sending to an exchange or from an exchange. Like, there's going to be ways to track people, and there's going to be ways to hide. I think we have a better solution today than what we have in the banking system, where there's effectively nowhere to hide. And anytime you're sending money through a bank, you're fully KYC'd. So I'm happy about that, but I think it's too early again to say, like, whether or not we get, I don't think we'll get perfect privacy for everyone. And I don't think we'll get, you know, perfect tracking for everyone. Somewhere in the middle.
Have you ever used RoboStats too? I know I'm kind of going on a backward path here, but I'm just wondering if you've ever used it before.
I haven't used it myself.
Okay, fair enough. And we got a question here from the audience. Chase Hoddle's asking, Bitrex committed Hara Kiri, and I remember Zap/Strike. Jack Mahler saying that he used Bitrex trading to help his app trade from currency to another, and it goes on. How is Strike handling all of the government enforcement in the U.S.? Are you aware if there's the answer to this, or?
I'm not actually sure. I don't know much about Strike's government.
Because there are some regulatory hurdles they must be dealing with. They have to jump through, and people they have to appease to make this all a reality, or else, you know, the hand of the government's going to come and slap them on the wrist, or worse, maybe shut them down. Who knows? So, yeah.
Yeah. I imagine there's some pretty big compliance challenges at all these companies. Anyone interacting with banks or, you know, sending money across borders, there's going to be a point of, you're going to have to ask yourself this question of, do we comply or do we not? And if you do not, you are, you know, you better be doing things. You better have a way in which you cannot be traced or tracked, because, you know, you're effectively going, I guess you're going against the law in some way. And so, you know, the companies that choose to, you know, abide by these regulations, they're going to also, they have choices to make too. Mm-hmm. I think it's still to be seen what the correct choice or what the outcome of all these decisions is going to be. But yeah, I don't have too much insight on Strike's particular case.
In a short term, it makes sense to comply with all regulatory requirements. Is that way you're not going to raise any concerns with the people in charge, and you're able to operate on their soil, and, you know, they'll just leave you alone for the most part. It may hinder growth, but at least you're going to have less enemies for the short term. For the long term, who knows if that's the best course of action, but that's just my two sides. Kevin, before we close things off, there are any final thoughts, anything you want to just get off your chest before we close this one up?
I'm just excited about people stacking sats, people experimenting with Lightning apps. And I'm very hopeful about Lightning's future. And yeah.
It's certainly going to pave the way for adoption moving forward, for actually transacting, because doing on-chain transactions doesn't make sense for the most part. It's too slow. It's too cumbersome. And Lightning just creates a whole bunch of new possibilities moving forward. And before we sign off, Kevin, where could people find you and reach you if they have any questions or want to talk to you? The floor is yours.
Sure. So I have a podcast. It's called The Kevin Rook Show. And I have a website called stacksats.how, outlining a number of tools you can use to stack sats. And you can follow me on Twitter at KERook. And that's about it.
Check him out on Fountain. He's usually in the top 50 in terms of the charts. So he's very well received in terms of listenership. Encouraged this to stay there. So listen to his show and make sure he stays there. Let's try to bring him to number one if possible. So Kevin, appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you so much. And
thank
for everybody,
you for having me.
My pleasure, my friend. And for everybody that's going to be tuning in later on, it's going to be a fun one. Preston Pish comes in. Joey's going to be talking to him at 9 p.m. this evening. So until then, take care and have a great evening.